famous reindeer of all. Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer had a very shiny nose, and if you ever saw it, you would even say it glows. All of the other.
It is Christmas time in Tennessee Valley, and so the trap mix of Rudolph is really what I'm into in the dirty. I don't know why people can't form their own opinion. I seek information, process it, and form an informed opinion. I'm responsible for my own, and I encourage the listener to follow suit. I wish I had known this many years ago, because the unsolicited opinions of others would not have kept me from exploring the world more than I ever wanted to. I probably would have gone further, been gone more often, if finances and time would have allowed me to be curious. I wish happiness and light to every listener, that you too will read more, endeavor to eat amazing food, hopefully locally sourced, and create happiness. Take my words as I explore books, movies, comfort foods, and my own short stories. As I write my own short stories, I should say. As I create my own joy, or at least try. Write with me if you like, and share with others if it brings you joy. Light and happiness for everyone. This is my wish for us this holiday season. I am trying my best not to have distorted music as it backs up. As I back up and record the podcast. And I also am attempting not to have a whole bunch of background noise. So I got to have all my remotes as I'll continue to watch my BET Plus. If I can suggest anything for you guys to subscribe to, of all the streaming service, I think BET Plus for positive black movies and black voices, unlike the one tab under Prime Video, that I guess it maps back to BET Plus, and I think they're collaboration is great for all of the positive black movies that are out there. But I am watching, or I have been just like binge watching several holiday inspired, love inspired, just sappy romantic movies all today. And I'm watching or have on the background Angrily Ever After. And it's actually surprisingly shocking that I actually like it. And I think it's more interesting than this trap mix of the holiday greats that I've been listening to specifically for this podcast. And just so you know, all of the music is available for immediate streaming on iTunes or wherever you listen to your music. I've had Mariah Carey on our rotation since Thanksgiving, and she never disappoints. But I also have discovered this music because I wanted to be able to use it in some type of way as like the theme music for my upcoming podcast. I am just excited that I get this opportunity to continue to talk to you about different things. And today was just one of those days, which it was just really cool. I spend most of my time inside. Yesterday, I went outside to go pick up an order from Home Depot. And I have a fire pit. This is a gas fire pit. I do have one from the Dallas Cowboys that I've used when I go camping, but this one is actually pretty cool that it's I'm sure it kicks off a tremendous amount of heat. But what was annoying was there were 5 million pieces that had to be put together. And that's basically all I do on my weekends. I may go to pick up groceries. I may go to pick up booze, of all things. But I went out yesterday to do that, to run errands. I forgot to go and exchange my winning scratch-offs. That's another thing. I don't go anywhere. I wish I could, but I've been a hermit now almost 2 years. So I'm like, what the hell am I going to go anywhere for? But who knows? I may start going places just because I want to talk about them. But then again, I went out today to an open house to where I live for the past year in safety. And it was just surreal. Some of my best podcast episodes were created on Mississippi Avenue. And today I had the opportunity to go to the open house, not only to showcase the artistic stylings of my friend Adrian, but also to see just how pretty and it was just that same vibe at Mississippi Avenue. It's an Airbnb, and I became a long-term renter because I did not want to have another check on my credit and also having to move twice. It's fully furnished, one-bedroom apartment, full kitchen, full refrigerator, and that's where some of my best posts, the flower pictures, my ramen noodle pictures, all of that stuff was created while I was on Mississippi Avenue, and it was just really surreal being back there. I was just there as a onlooker, and I realized that I had stayed at one point in time in both of the apartments upstairs. If you get the chance, navigate to my podcast notes to not only purchase one of the prints from that was on display, but also just check out, go to Adrian Powell's site to check out Adrian's rental. I remarked to one of the other patrons there that living on Mississippi Avenue was a great transition for me because it allowed me to get used to and transitioning to my life here on the North Shore of Tennessee. I don't think I would have been able to do it any other way. North Shore is a different vibe than other parts of the city, but I feel safe here. People just leave me the hell alone. They do check cars up in this mug, probably more so than any part of the city. And that means they not gonna work too hard. They're gonna check to see if your doors are open, and then they're gonna try to steal what they can, and they're gonna mess up stuff too, because that's really annoying. But at the same time, I was able, and I'm still able, to ride out this epidemic in safety. I sat on the second floor of Adrian's apartment and fussed at people that was rolling around at the height of the pandemic without a mask on, like Rona wasn't gonna come for them. One of my other neighbors OD'd and fell off the wagon and ran her car into a tree. And that was parked on the road for a while. Houses come up for sale for a whopping 36 hours before they're sold for way above the ask price up here. I'm very fortunate that I was able to lock in the contract on my home where I am. And all the while, Adrian, because she actually contracted Corona, she rediscovered her artistic output. The flowers that she so lovingly cared for, was she was able to recreate in her paintings. The bridges that we all take for granted are themselves works of art, even they are scientific feats because of their symmetry and because what we've assigned for them to do. How cool is that? And I don't think a lot of people can take any point and just look at their city, their town, and just realize and be grateful that they have the opportunity to live there, and how the town, the restaurants, the bookstores, friends, how all of those things can come together and can be an inspiration for the people to create something. And who knew? I mean, I came here for the first time in 2013, when I was doing a go live through Clinovations. And then I was just told by a fluke, because my intent was to move to Atlanta. I'm so glad that I established, got a taste of a small city with big city connections. I'm glad. I think my path was always to come back here. I wasn't quite ready when I moved into my house on Franklin, but it seems like everything, now that I'm really am unpacking my things that were separated into storage for over a year in North Carolina, it was like things that I had bought for both spaces in North Carolina, I was supposed to bring them here. And I'm discovering that, and it's very disconcerting, because I've never felt that I was at home, besides my rented townhouse in Charlotte. Even that there did not feel the same safety and the same being at home as I do here. I'm just grateful for the opportunity to be able to do the job, my daytime job. But I'm also just completely floored. And I got to make sure I pay that note. I'm completely floored that I am allowed to live in a place that seems like it was chosen for me, that I chose. I have a pool. I have a dog that thinks she's Chihuahua, but she thinks she's a Rottweiler, and I'm just allowed to exist, and I get to still create this podcast. There's always a twist on everything that I see, and I don't feel comfortable being in or great groups of people. But I'll share my thoughts in my podcast because it's uninterrupted. I get to think about it and I get to flow. That's why I think I love what I do, my day job, because I don't ever feel that I'm completely under the gun to produce a whole bunch of things. I get to basically think about what I'm going to do, what I'm going to say, what I'm going to write, and reread it before I actually sign it. Out of all of my adult career, having the opportunity to think and to make a decision and be able to write it out, I'm grateful for that opportunity. I'm also very grateful that I'm given the opportunity and that I have a disposable income that allows me to produce this podcast, to get really great nerdy kind of swag. This little Air computer has an amazing microphone, also allows me to download some very great audio editing software. But I wouldn't be great if I didn't have the opportunity to subscribe to newspapers and to other podcasts and to be able, all these different apps that also inspire me to create and to give an opinion on multiple different things. Who knew all of this was possible from a broke kid from Virginia? Now I am a professional woman, black woman, living here in Tennessee, creating my way to happiness. And how cool is that? And I'm bringing y'all along for the ride. Now that is cool. We'll be right back. love this trap mix of Feliz Navidad. This whole remix from the Trap Queens on iTunes is where I want to be this holiday season. I'm vibing to a lot of different songs. Old school, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, some Nat King Cole, some Bing Crosby, Frank, all of them. But when you just mix it up a little bit, but saying the same words is kind of cool. But anyways, what else am I reading? I recently bought the New York Times book review, The Last 100 Years, when presidents were not dumbasses like our autistic president of the last administration. When they had some sense and they wrote compelling pieces for the New York Times, because they were pushed to be well-read and they actually could write. I'm talking specifically about Theodore Roosevelt. They also had reviews with Alex Haley in the heyday of just when book signings were cool, as well as Langston Hughes, just to name a few. But in today's, one of the reasons, why do I know this? Let me start right there. I started reading the New York Times right around, and it was not even during when it was actually on TV. Sex in the City, the single girl sports pages. I did not discover Sex of the City until it was in reruns in the mid-2000s. I did not know who Carrie Bradshaw was. I did not know what a Manolo Blahnik was. I did not know about a Cosmopolitan, what the hell that was. But one of the things that I was, as a dork, was completely compelled by was her being a writer, and how on she basically, when Charlotte got married, and the big thing for her was her write-up in the New York Times, Sunday New York Times. I applied for it, and when I was working in Texas, I got it delivered to me like every Sunday while I lived in Cedar Hill. That's when I discovered Boston Coach when I had the whole thing before. This was basically before Uber, and I would have a private car escort me back and forth to the airport. Man, I was so bougie and broke. It was ridiculous. But it was the best way for me to ensure that I was getting back and forth on time for my flights as I was flying all over the place for my job. I think that was probably prep for probably what I'm going to be able to do or go in the next iteration of my life. Not through my day job. I think my bougie-fied ways are going to be that was a precursor about where I am going to be going, but I digress. I also, during this time, not only got with, so getting back to what I was saying, I basically skim the front page and the business section. I don't pay too much attention to the business section or the front page itself, because some of the headlines are just ridiculous. And I know I'm going to get a reboot of everything in time for the morning news on Monday. As I mentioned in the last segment, Art Basel was this past weekend, and Lizzo actually had a concert, live concert, and there was a live streaming. And I'm probably going to just do my opinion, because she's body positive. She's shaking her dimple ass on Instagram, and she seemed to be having a lot of fun. I want to see what made her shake her butt like that on Instagram, because I'm sure it's going to be amusing. But what I was talking about was what I'm reading in the New York Times. There wasn't a whole bunch in the front page Even the Arts and Leisure, Sunday Styles, with the exception of Art Basel, that I found inspiring. But one of the, in the book review, The Queen's Gambit by Carolyn Weber, I found compelling because I have a thing about European royalty. You're going to write about this messy ish. I'm going to have to read it. And it doesn't sound like this particular editor or reviewer did not like Nancy Goldstone's 616-page In the Shadow of the Empress, The Defiant Lives of Mary Therese, Mother of Marie Antoinette and Her Daughters. I'm compelled because I didn't realize that Marie Antoinette actually had three other sisters, and how I remember vaguely seeing a movie about her life. Was it Claire Taylor Dane? Somebody actually played Marie Antoinette, and I realized that she was almost forced to marry the weird clock or key lock picking king of France at the time. They had a understanding as far as consummation of their marriage, as well as how they were going, she was going to produce an heir for the throne. I'm always fascinated about strong women. I'm fascinated. I was fascinated. I have books about Elizabeth I. I have books about Catherine the Great. I have books about King George, Queen Victoria, the crazy King George, and all of his daughters. He had 1,000 kids, and how all of the daughters had to wait for him to be institutionalized or die before they actually could start their lives. And here is the same thing. I suspect that I'm also going to find out about Marie Antoinette. When the people stopped interfering in their relationship, that's when they were both able to relax and learn to love each other and to join and to enjoy their union. So even though this article is rife with haterade, and she said that the book was garbage, I'm just compelled to not only get this book, but any other book about the life of Marie Antoinette. Check the receipts, I'm sure, because they said there were some historical inaccuracies with this book, is when you basically dial it back and make a comparison. But I'm sure it has the beginnings of being a very good read. So I'm going to be adding In the Shadow of the Empress by Nancy Goldstone to chatterbooks, as well as other books about the life and times of Marie Antoinette, her sisters, and her imposing mother. You know, people want to trash strong women, and it doesn't matter wherever they go or wherever you are. No one is exempt from being dragged. And you can be, it can be 400-500 years later, people still going to drag you for daring to be strong and daring to be different. So go figure. That is Rocking Around a Christmas Tree, the Trap remix. And I can't imagine not having this part. I hope people don't think that Harlem is a trap remix of, say, Sex and the City. That would suck, but it would be a great addition. So, what is Harlem? What have I been binge watching? Harlem is a... Harlem is on Prime. A streaming service, if you're an Amazon customer, Prime member. It has some of the best one-liners, I think, of any movie that I've had the pleasure to binge watch. It tells the story of the intersecting life of four black women as they navigate through life in the big city, Brooklyn, New York, that is. There's Angie, who is the natural hair rearing crazy friend that everyone needs to have. There is Quinn, the black privilege, yellow, fair-skinned, rich girl, upper class, who is a designer with a heart. Angie lives with her. She has to go back, keep going back to her parents to get more money to finance her bougie lifestyle. There is the butch, gay, lesbian character Ty, who is absolutely fascinating. And then there is Camille Parks, who's played by Megan Good. Now, Megan Good is a beautiful, petite black girl that plays the sidekick, side chick maybe, beautiful girlfriend in many previous. She has a very extensive filmography. I think if you were to navigate back to IMDb, that you would find that she's been in a lot of movies. I just basically watched a movie that it looks like she produced, that was If Now When. And one of the podcasters that hit me to, I actually started watching Harlem even before I listened to Ratchet and Respectable on, from Demetria Lucas, because it caught my eye because I saw these beautiful black women. I was like, okay, what is this about? So I read the little insert and narration and I said, okay, I gotta watch this. But it is obvious that they spent money. They had amazing writer's room. Their situations were realistic. And unlike Sex and the City, because people have complained about Sex and the City and the flop that there was of the second movie because of relevance, you know, harping around New York City, centered on some skinny white girl, is any of that relevant? Figuring out that Carrie and Big were not going to have kids and not having kids and the implications of not finding love, making bad decisions while looking fly is a possibility. Being responsible for your own joy, your own happiness in relationships, and all the while paying your rent on time. What are your priorities? Were all a thing for these women. There was just so many great scenes and side themes as far as the series itself. It is a limited series on Prime. And of course people are going to talk about comparisons to Sex and the City, which was a juggernaut. It was, as one writer wrote, in the television section of the New York Times today, that it is aspirational. It was groundbreaking in its day. They're talking about relevance. I think as a professional black woman, this is as relevant, as you can get. There are other shows similar from what I understand, Rule the World, but who hasn't made these bad decisions? I wish I was as free and experimental as these women, but it's great to see a movie, a show that the characters look like me. Angie looks like me. She has gaps. She has fro. Why wouldn't I want to watch this and probably watch it more than one? Why can't we have more than one show about professional black women? Wilden, granted, but why can't we have more than one show about us? They don't ask. We don't say the same thing about the millions of white shows that are out there. This show feels more authentic than any of the other shows that are on that are playing right now. With the exception of Issa Rae's show on Insecure, I mean, it's California, but I still support it because it's well written. I also watch Our Kind of People. It's very nouveau riche, black privilege, but I think I like the flow of the story and the development of the storyline better with Harlem, more so than I do with Our Kind of People. Upper New York, Martha's Vineyard is completely different than the Boogie Down Brooklyn, so I'm thankful for that. I like how the women play off of each other, and they seem to genuinely like each other. There's separate but equal storylines. They overact and interact to make tell a very compelling story that hooks you in. They also are realistically represent how women or people in friendships can say some whack shit to each other. They have opinions about everything, but they're still friends. Who knew? They have career success, and they also represent realistically that career success does not equal success in the rest of your life, because these women, although they are very successful, make some awful decisions. Some of the best one-liners in the whole show is "What in the Hotep?" I thought that was hysterical. And "The Hair Not Defining Me," when Ty has to get up from her usual barber and she goes into some new agey black natural hair place and they so screw up her hair. And right in time for her Forbes interview, which she's been talking about, and which she knows that she actually has to go with the Philly fade because the people at that beauty shop screwed her up. And it's basically Ty the Q-Pac. They don't give a F about who you're dating. She had to basically realize that she was in love and liked somebody that was not of her same race. But who cared? She was basically reacting over the face of other queer people because of the race of who she was vibing with. They just didn't get to her in time. That's their loss. And also not being a sellout. People are going to try to make you feel a whole kind of way, but you don't actually have to believe them. The whole show was also how Megan Good's character, Camille, her whole career was based on her management of her social media profile. She used it effectively, but Whoopi Goldberg, who became the department head, wasn't buying it. And that was the other thing. Everybody and their grandmama was in this movie. I dig all of the supporting characters, from Ian, who was the bouncer from P-Valley. Whoopi was in it. Jasmine Guy. How old is Jasmine Guy? You know, black don't crack, but yellow does mellow. But anyways, there was the broccoli and beef eating girl, the Uber dude, Emmanuel, the ad executive wannabe who lived in his Escalade, the protester that, I think his name is Sullivan Royce, who was a complete fuckboy, but that's a whole nother story. This storyline in this particular series was completely binge-worthy, worth a binge, and worth another look, because I'm thinking I'm going to have to watch it again because I know I missed something. And also, another theme that they touched on is when Ty basically was having pelvic pain, and how the ED doctor blew her off until she was trying to go again on a talking tour, and she basically passed out in the airport, and it was a ruptured ovarian cyst, and how he blew her off. He didn't do any imaging. He did some tests, and he basically said, okay, get out, after he kept them there for 5 hours. Who does that? And also, he ignored some very concerning signs. Is it just because she was a black queer woman that he just blew it off? Because I guess, okay, she's not bleeding out now because she's not anemic. She's not in renal failure. My tests don't show she has some invasive infection. So you can go and live to slay another day. But if somebody tells you that I'm in this pain, is more than, and I've been bleeding for 11 days, why are you going to blow that off? And I'm having this life-ending pelvic pain. Who would not at least do a pelvic exam or do at least an ultrasound? Especially, she's a multimillionaire. She got insurance. So why wouldn't you? I hate these bitches. I completely hate medical people. And it's really hard being a woman of color, an adult in this society, when you got dumbass doctors like this fool running the show. I can understand why people don't trust the medical establishment, because this representation of the medical establishment is not so far how African-American women across the board are treated. This is a woman with a non-pregnancy gynecological problem. You can only imagine how poorly we are treated and how we treat our own when they're pregnant. I can't. It's just so awful. But getting back to the inevitable comparisons to Sex and the City. Yes, this is about four young women in New York City. The new Just Like That is getting ready to prepare on HBO Max. This is another streaming service that I suggest that you actually subscribe to on Thursday, that goes back and follows the travels and travails of the Manolo Blahnik wearing Carrie Bradshaw, her friend Charlotte, and Cynthia Nixon, the lawyer girl, Miranda. Now, we got answers to the questions about children. Now they're going to be talking about middle age. And I wonder if Miranda is still with Steve. No, Big is not dead. And I believe he and Carrie are still together. I don't really give a shit about Charlotte and her possibly masturbating daughters. I don't care. But at least they have added other women of color to this inner circle. And Samantha is not a part of this for whatever reason. Artistic differences. She just hates the Sarah Jessica Parker. I don't know. But she's not dead, has not been written off the storyline, but she is not participating off this reboot that's getting ready to drop on Thursday. You can't say that, actually you can say that the original series was about the sexual liberation of some skinny white people in New York City, living way above their means, marrying well, and doing the damn thing, all while running across the city in stiletto heels. This is not that. This is how they have navigated that and survived serious injury into their 50s. I think it's going to be interesting. They at least have updated, according to this picture in the New York Times, Carrie's computer. But I don't think it's going to be same old, same old. Stanford Blatch, that character, he basically recently died of cancer. May he rest in power. But I think it's going to be slightly more. They're still at their restaurant. It seems like the neighborhood has changed a little bit. But these women interaction with their with change, the pandemic and the changes in New York, I think, and it looks like Charlotte is a little bit thicker, all of them except for Sarah Jessica Parker. She always looks a little bit anorexic, but all of them look their age, with more curves. Better, same awesome clothes, I'm sure, amazing accoutrement, accessories. I don't think it's going to be just any old reboot of the old Sex and City series. I don't think that's possible. All of these people are in their 50s. It's not going to be the same. And of course, I'm going to watch it. And any series that is compared to that groundbreaking series, that, you know, in itself is going to get you some views, but I think they all have to be respected for what they are and who they represent, and they're just not exact carbon copies of the original franchise. And that's what I wanted to say about the comparison of Harlem and the Sex and the City reboot. Sex and the City, this reboot may not feel like Sex and the City, the movie 2, but Harlem by itself as a work of art and a fair representation of the now of it all is pretty amazing. And are we now ready to accept and believe and to capitalize on Black women doing it with very few resources, different than the Sex and the City of it all? Is this ready for public consumption, or is it going to be just a niche population that is going to vibe off of that? I'm interested that it's on Prime. That platform is going to reach a maximum amount of people, but is it relatable? I think it is. And for the naysayers that says it's not, you need to go sit down somewhere because you don't know what you're talking about. Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. Bits and all his reindeer pulling on. You would actually think that this next section should not have such a jaunty Christmas, even with the trap mix of Here Comes Santa Claus. But in this section, I wanted to ask people to take a minute to honor those that have passed on. Seems like people, like Grandma used to say, are just leaving, going away from here just faster than you can absolutely think. Time is not guaranteed to anyone. We all have to make of it what we can, and don't take anything for granted. I don't think when David Sondheimer went to sleep and posed for those pictures 5 days before he passed away that he thought that he was not going to wake up. And so it is. And people now are having remembrances to him. You know, what we could have given him his flowers as he was alive, but going to his, he wasn't hurting, and going to his many musicals that headlined his music was a great. Same thing with Sylvia Weinstock, the Da Vinci of Wedding Cakes. Her obituary I read this morning in the New York Times. She was a famed Manhattan chef. And all she did was make these magical wedding cakes. She passed away recently, or actually this past weekend, of old age. And then Bob Dole, statesman, longtime senator, presidential candidate, died today, or was it yesterday, at the age of 98, served his country proud over 70 years. I think that's absolutely amazing, that he was able, to do that in as long. And when you think about it, you know, what will people write about you? Will you have a life well served, or will you be just known for causing trouble, or being a douche, or how do you want to be remembered? I think Sylvia Weinstock, Sondheim, Bob Dole, their work spoke for them. They lived a life of service and music and beauty, and that's what people remember them for. Now I'm going to pause all the cool Christmas music because I got a read that I want to share with the listening audience. This past week, we suffered another school shooting, senseless killing. I think that kid's name was Ethan Crumbly. Walked into the school with a semi-automatic weapon that was purchased by his father and shot up the school. Several people were hurt. Kill four of his classmates. One of the guys, young men, ran towards him. I don't know, was he confused or disoriented, or did he basically take it upon himself to slow down what he knew was the inevitable slaughter of hundreds of other students? I like to think the latter. And I also want to say that this guy, they also showed him trying to break into a classroom to rain down more terror on more students. I think if the kids did not identify him as not law enforcement, he would have gone into that classroom and he would have sprayed them and killed more students. What I'm very ticked off about is the school knew that he was crazy. They alerted his parents, and his parents refused to do anything. In fact, when he was researching ammunition, his mother told him, "You need to do whatever you can to not get caught." It was as if his own parents knew he was unstable, refused to care for him, and take responsibility for him, and gave him the weapon that would rain down terror, that they would all go down in infamy. Putting all of them underneath the jail would not, I don't think, would be enough for these fools. I think he looks like he, when you look at this kid's eyes, his eyes are dead, as well as his parents. I don't know what terror he actually had to live through. I don't know what demons he actually was compelled him to do this horrible act. But I also think that his parents ain't shit either. They found these cowards hiding in some building in Detroit. Were they on their way out of the country, leaving their kid to the wolves? Like, we were going to take over for their stupid mistake. Like, they didn't provoke this kid to go rogue and shoot up the school. Like, it was when he left the house, it completely absolved them of any responsibility to manage their children. Why have children if you're not going to manage them? If he has some issues, make sure the kid gets help. But don't arm him and let him go and shoot up a school. Who does that? Mama ain't shit, the father ain't shit, and whoever drove these motherfuckers to hide in Detroit ain't shit either. I think all of them. And the school. Don't get me wrong. I think when adults and families and people put the illness on the school to basically police these kids, that's the whole, that was wrong too. They are there to educate. They're not the police. They're not, that's not what their stick is. Should there have been some other procedures to remove this kid from general population of the school and get him out? If his parents were not going to take responsibility for him, come pick his ass up. Why wasn't this kid in the pediatrician's office, or why wasn't this kid at some behavioral health, and should have stayed his ass out until he was not was deemed a danger to himself or to the general population? I think they could have involuntarily removed this kid, and he should have. And they may, if his parents weren't going, they should have been penalized then, because they should have come and picked his crazy ass up. But they should have also completely removed him, either searched him and took the gun away, but they basically should have had got him committed not to be in his population. Somebody needs to take a look at their procedures, because he was clearly a danger given his online Facebook and post and what he was doing, which seems to be a violation of the rules of conduct of these particular websites. But he should not have been allowed in this school until he calmed the fuck down, and until they could have been able to search him and make sure he ain't bringing guns and shit and knives and shit in school. I don't get it. I just, and again, all these children right before the holidays are traumatized, running for their lives. Friends are killed, lives lost unnecessarily, way too early, because someone was given a gun and he decided to take out his rage, take out his self-hate, simply because he was having a really bad day on everybody else. Because, and one of the young men I bet he took out is because, I don't know if he was bullied, but that's no excuse. But the one of the men, young men that he actually took out, he probably knew he could never be this young man. And he decided to end his life simply because of haterade. That, to me, when you basically pick up a gun and destroy and end lives because of your own meaning of self-inadequacy, there are a whole bunch of people that feel the same way. And I think our gun laws are way too lax to have them to have this accessibility, because a whole bunch of people are going to riot. A whole bunch of people are going to be meant to shoot up schools because of the easy accessibility of these weapons. And I find it's very troubling. I think a society that allows this to happen over and over again, we got to do something. But we can start with holding these families accountable. We can start about making sure of the accessibility of involuntary holds and mental health benefits to these kids that are obviously troubled. But how can you change the mind, and how can you make sure that this kid who feels inadequate, if you're a weirdo, lean into it, but you don't got to shoot up the school, you know? If you are different, it's okay. Just because you want what somebody else, you perceive somebody else has, but you think it's your right, so you're going to end their life just because you feel inadequate, that in itself is some bullshit. But you should not have access to the weapons themselves. That's all I'm saying. But I want to also put the illness on society itself, as well as his bitch ass parents, because you shouldn't bought that automatic gun if you weren't going to secure it, and you shouldn't have been encouraging this unstable kid to go and shoot up the school. What kind of sociopath are you? Sociopath, birth or sociopaths? I can't stand it. And it reflects badly on society at whole, but we need to hold these fools accountable for their inadequacy and their encouragement of this kid to commit mass murder. who does that? And they need to pay. How I'm going to end this part of the podcast is my short story, Bridges of Madison County. This is not. This is the true story of wretchedness and survival in a city of the Dirty South, Gig City, Chattahoochee, to those in the know, my hometown, Chattanooga, Tennessee. Oh, who am I? The only female city worker with a natural Michael Jackson-sized fro. I'm Jacqueline Wanda Bird, second oldest grandchild of Big Mama Grace. Only child claimed by my biological father, Big Sam, and known as J Boogie to my few close friends because I walk to a beat in my head and will break out dancing. No provocation. I'm the youngest daughter with two younger brothers and a family of nine. Born smack dab in the middle of nowhere. Being told by misguided relatives, racist guidance counselors, vice principals, and teachers of what I could not be. I never got to dream and strive for what I wanted to be as a kid. We lived in the Southside Projects on the end of 12th and Nowhere. Dreams went there to die. We all were from different fathers and family and support. My older siblings being split between the juvenile criminal system and ended up with their paternal relatives. My mother would marry my younger brother's father before pulling up and moving to Atlanta, leaving me with a neighbor until social service tracked down my father's mother, Big Mama Grace. She was not too far away of all places, in Mission Bridge side of town, in her shotgun house. I went from dead dreams and derision to a house of hope. House of hope. Big Mama wasn't having it. She saw something in myself and another cousin, Abel, abandoned by her only daughter that she didn't see in her own children and she wasn't allowed to see in herself. She was determined to make a good life for all of us. She became a reading volunteer at the Chattanooga Public Library, so we were able to get out of the environment just for half a day or at a time. We could roam the aisles and help the other librarians. Abel gravitated toward the art section and pottery, while I was drawn for some reason to architecture and graphic design and electronics. All the while figuring out how I was going to apply all that I read to either escape or survive in Hamilton County. Making Chattanooga the second city of lights came out of an idea of mine when Grant began to decorate the bookstores to emulate the New York stores during Christmas in New York. She would never visit the city until later on in her life. But through the pictures that she saw in books and magazines in the library and in the bookstore, she would then volunteer to decorate the neighboring, that store as well as the neighboring record store on Fraser Avenue on the North Shore. As my cousin Abel and I grew up, he being a designer and I became a somewhat of a savant electrician. Mind you, we were still only 12 and 14, respectively. We became somewhat of a dynamic duo on the North Shore. My grandmother had her sights of working her way to becoming indispensable to all of those storefront owners. And at the time, her color and her credit score made her less than a possible business owner. So she just waited and learned. She would learn the power of partnership and collaboration by gaining the trust of all those white storefront owners. She would work as an employee, then as a co-owner of first Hot Diggity Dog, eventually buying it out when the owners wanted to retire. She would become co-owner and then owner of Books on Fraser before buying it out when that owner wanted to retire. She would then become co-owner of Let It Spin Vintage Records and Music on Frazier, and then the full owner when that owner wanted to retire and his kids, and he wanted to keep his children from either crushing and injecting the profits of the store in their veins or putting it up their nose. This is how she built her entrepreneurial empire. Pretty impressive for a woman with a junior high education from the wrong side of the tracks. Having a pint-sized electrician, me, and soon-to-be fashion designer, Abel, increased the profitability of her businesses, but she wanted to make sure that we would train and train well. She would always have the best artists and the tradespeople fix her properties and then pass on the knowledge to us. Big Mama was always on the grind. She was a young grandmother. She had her children when she was just a teenager, and then they started having children when they were teenagers. When we came to live with her, she was in her mid-40s, ready to position and start a new life, but she would take us with her. And again, she wouldn't visit Paris until later in life, but those Parisian cafes from the romance novels and the bookstores was, well, when she applied that to her businesses of Hot Diggity Dog and a coffee shop on those sidewalks lining Market Avenue and Frazier. She was the first to do it in our city. She also was the first to marry books and coffee and desserts before the big box takeover. But because she was local, it continued. She would keep her businesses afloat when other locals descended into chaos with the pandemic. And what kept her going was local source flavor by roasters and from local bakeries. I took every trade course at Howard High School and Chattanooga Tech simply because I wanted to know and wanted a way out of the depravity of the projects and with education and application. I bank on my gender giving me the distinction, but my color would often be remarked upon and could be a hindrance if I allowed it to be. I would enter entry-level technical jobs with the city, but I would know everything about the grid to improve upon it, to simply because I had progressive leads that would allow me to upgrade the system and follow my dreams beyond my own imagination. My dreams would have to keep up with the encouragement that I would have to get. They would not know that upgrades to the system would allow me to bring the big dreams when I was wiring Big Ma and her neighbor's storefront, initially on Frazier, but then extending it to the city so everyone could enjoy the themes of my musical themes of my childhood. On the city itself, sharing the music that I listened to in the head with the rest of the world. My colleagues and I would be responsible for giving the city first the gig build up and then the 50 gig status. With the cooperation of Tennessee Valley Authority and then its offshoot EPB, we would establish the most reliable and powerful broadband connection. Simply because I wanted to create a Christmas show, a Christmas light show, that is. The Wall Street Walker Bridge decoration was the easiest because it became a pedestrian bridge, and we did not after shut it down to be able to string the lights. The decoration started and continued before the Armada in mid-November. It seems that no one noticed the lighted bridges, even during the dark days of solitude at the beginning of 2020, that extended well into 2021. But from a psychological standpoint, this is what kept me sane as well. I did not know kept the entire city sane. I would be patrolling the bridge with my electric cart. And this is how we would continue to maintain for decades, hopefully decades to come, for those bridges. Many people lost their lives even prior to the bridge becoming a pedestrian bridge. Big Mom was the last possible casualty before the bridge was closed to motorized traffic. She was hit by a drunk driver as a kid and left for dead, surviving due to her own strong will and the surgeons who would not give up on her. She would recover and win one of the largest settlements against the city at the time, springboarding her into an investor and buying businesses, assuring her grandchildren's inheritance, all from an almost unfortunate accident. This same bridge would be the site of death and mishap, would become a launching pad for my own career in lighting. So much negativity coming from positivity. So much positivity coming from negativity was amazing. Between the connections with the music and the broadband, our efforts would lead to within 5 years the light show becoming synonymous with the holiday season. And it would start with the lighting of the bridge. And all became solar powered at no extra drain on a system. Very little cost for the city to manage and to upkeep because of LED. It would draw hundreds of thousands of people to the city, even in spite of the dumpster fire year of 2020. The beautiful bridges would be coordinated with Nat King Cole, Frank Sinatra, and Bing Crosby, and became even consideration of the largest city in America for consideration in the Guinness Book of World Records, only beat out by France. It's funny. The run-up to the Four Bridges Spectacular was simply a dream from a kid. From nowhere, but who wanted everyone to enjoy the lights of the season and to enjoy the beauty of Chattanooga. And again, this ends this week's podcast. I hope you would enjoy the reading. Little choppy from my short story, right in time, right in flavor. I'm hopeful, right in flavor with the season itself. Four Bridges, let me know what you think. Also, take the time to navigate to my blog site, buy some merch. Simply a Nah Girl shirt for a stupid. For a kind of a saucy answer to ridiculous question, as well as Tin Fro is reading swag, celebrating my state. I'm very much leaning into being Tin Fro. I love where I live. I love my little gangster dog. I love swimming in my pool, and I just love the entire vibe of finally feeling at home. I'm leaning into the joy and wonderfulness of this city, and I hope my joy is extended to the listening audience. Enjoy this season. Support a sister, buy a t-shirt, or make a donation, or become a subscriber. I have a whole bunch to say, and I don't mind sharing it with people. Until next time, y'all. Bye.